Well, I guess we'll about ready to get started here, on our class. Part 5 of the book of Exodus today. Did everybody get a handout? I just got a list of the scriptures that we're going to look at today. And there's a little bit of space between them if you need to take a note or two, but there's not a lot, I guess. I apologize for that. It's right small. And as you can see, we're going to be in Exodus primarily. Later on down, we're going to go back up a book to Genesis, and then one reference will be in Hebrews, which is towards the end of the New Testament. So still a heads up on kind of where we're going to be there. But primarily we're going to be in Exodus 5 and hopefully even through 6 today. We'll see how things move along. And as we left the story, you could call it last week, into chapter 4, and Moses and Aaron had been told to go talk to the people, and he performed the signs in front of the people, and they believed what he was saying, and this is going to be a good thing. Because in verse 31 of chapter 4, you don't have to turn there. It says, "So the people believed, and when they heard that the Lord was concerned about the sons of Israel, that he had seen their affliction, they then bowed low in worship." So they were excited, they were happy that this was happening to them. And as I was thinking about the people, or as you know, often refer to them as the nation of Israel or these Hebrew people, and as we saw earlier, I won't backtrack too far or too long today in Exodus. You know, these people are traced back directly, you know, through Joseph, through Jacob, you know, back to Isaac, Abraham. I mean, they're true descendants of Abraham, but at this point in Egypt, they're multiple generations away from that. And at this point, we probably, through genealogy, we probably could track it down pretty close if we wanted to. But to shorten it up, it's a pretty good span of time, and a lot of people, a lot of generations have come, even since Jacob and Joseph indwelled the land there. And we're gonna get this a bit more later today, but just a little heads up on kind of where I was headed with some things here. You know, we talk about the promise that God had to Abraham. Kyle talked about that again quite a bit today during our lesson. I truly believe that a lot of these people in Egypt didn't even know what that was. I think it was lost on them quite a bit. I think even, and I'm not saying all of them, but I think when Moses and Aaron came to them and told them about this God that had heard their cry, I think that was the first, like, maybe there's their first even idea of who this God was. And they, maybe they didn't even understand, this promise wasn't even an idea that they had. Now, that might not be completely true for everybody, but I feel like there was a lot of them there that they were enslaved in Egypt. That's all they knew. And all of a sudden, this great thing was going to come, and they were going to get delivered, and they were happy about it. So that's where we're at. We'll start out in chapter 5 today. Chapter 5 of Exodus. And we're going to see here, as I said, kind of how the story picks up and continues from there. So today, we'll just kind of do random reading if people would like. Exodus 5, verses 1 through 5. Okay, so we see here where Moses and Aaron finally go and ask Pharaoh to let them go. And as we saw earlier, when Moses and God were talking, God told Moses to go to Pharaoh and to tell him to let him go. And he also told him that he's going to not do that. Pharaoh's not going to let him go. So Moses had to kind of, maybe when he went to Pharaoh thinking, well, I don't think this is going to work. Kind of, he maybe didn't know exactly what was going to happen. But so they went and did that, though. And Pharaoh, you can almost, in verse 2, maybe even almost in a mocking kind of a way, possibly, who is this Lord that I should obey his word? Who is this? I'm the king of Egypt. There's nobody greater than me, right? That's what how he would think. He can control everybody. Who is this Lord that's going to tell me to let all these people go? And then he tells Moses and Aaron, this said in the slider, he's kind of, they're kind of getting a little reality check of who this Pharaoh guy is, you know, kind of how things are going to go between them here a little bit. And he reminds them that these people are everywhere. Remember, earlier on, Pharaoh was concerned about all of these people. He was fearful that they, if they rose up against him, they could overtake Egypt. So he enslaved them, and now he has control over them. They're spread all over through the land, doing all this hard labor for him, doing all their work. And he says to Moses and Aaron, you think I'm just going to let these people go? You're going to come, and just they're going to stop working, and you're going to take them for 3 days? And no, that ain't happening. It's not going to happen. They're not going to cease from their work. That's what he was looking at there. So somebody like to read verses 6 through 9 now. We'll continue on verses 6 through 9.
So the same day Pharaoh commanded taskmasters over the people and their foremen, saying, you are no longer to give the people straw to make brick as previously. Let them go and gather straw for themselves. But the quota of brick should, which they are making previously, you shall impose on them. You shall not to reduce any of it, because they are lazy. Therefore, they cry out, let us go and sacrifice to our God. Let the labor be heavier on them, and let them work at it, that they will pay no attention to these false words.
Okay, so we see Pharaoh's response here. Not only is he going to not let them go, but he's gonna make it harder for them. They're gonna have to keep doing the same amount of work that they're doing every day, building these bricks. We, you know, talking about the things that they built with these bricks, the pyramids, and all, you know, all kinds of different things from Egypt. They have to keep making the same amount of bricks, but now they got to go find their own straw. They're gonna have to figure out how to work a little harder. And it wasn't that he, and really, I mean, a pretty unreasonable demand, because I think they were probably making about as many bricks in a day as they could physically possibly make, and now he's saying, you got to keep making those, but you're going to have to figure out a way to do it better. Not something that's going to set well with them, is it? Right? Just a little bit ago, Moses and Aaron told these people, we're going to talk to Pharaoh, he's going to let you go, right? So they thought, well, that's great. So they go talk to Pharaoh, and then all of a sudden, you know, this isn't going to set well, probably, is it? Our next passage, and I got to apologize, I skipped one on my outline. It should be Exodus 5, 10 through 14 as our next passage. I forgot to mark that one. I knew when I counted them up, it didn't add up, but I couldn't figure it out. But there it is. So Exodus 5, 10 through 14, if somebody would like to read that. Okay, so they're given this unreasonable task, and they try to do it. We see where the foremans of Israel, people of Israel that were put in charge over the rest of the people, they kind of they're the ones that get questioned about this, and they're the ones that get punished. So why can't you guys get these bricks made? And they were beaten. So here we have another group of people, probably some influential people of the Israel people. That probably this isn't setting real well with it this time. So, well, let's see how they react here a little bit. If someone would like to read verses 15 down through 18, please.
Then the foreman of the sons of Israel came and cried out to Pharaoh, saying, "Why do you deal this way with your servants? There is no straw given to your servants, yet they keep saying to us, 'Make bricks.' And behold, your servants are being beaten, but it is the fault of your own people." But he said, "You are lazy, very lazy. Therefore, you say, 'Let us go and sacrifice to the Lord.' So go now and work, for you will be given no straw, yet you must deliver the quota of bricks."
Okay, so we see where the foremen of the sons of Israel come and they cry out to Pharaoh. And as you see on the screen there, it says, the people cry out, but to whom? What is their first instinct? Where do they turn for help? They go beg to Pharaoh, right? Let's turn back just a couple chapters, 3-4 chapters, to Exodus chapter 2. So we'd like to read verse 23 through 25, please.
God saw the sons of Israel, and God took notice of them.
Okay, so here we see not that long previously that the people cried out, and God heard them, right? And he responded to them. That's when Moses was sent to deliver them. How quickly they've forgotten that. Where did they cry out where they got a positive response? To God, right? And why couldn't you hear him now? Because they weren't talking to him. They went to Pharaoh. They complained to Pharaoh. What must we do? And that's a natural thing for them to do. I'm not necessarily saying that what they did to go speak to Pharaoh necessarily was at fault, but maybe their focus should have been more on God, what should we do? Or how are we going to do this? You said you're going to help us. What must we do? But no, they forget that, and they're thinking about the present, right? Right where they're right at the time when they're living there and the struggles that they have. And they go to Pharaoh. And that's Moses there, if you didn't know. And then if someone would like to read verse 19 back in Exodus chapter 5. Verse 19. Before we read that, has anybody got any comments on that or any thoughts on what's happening here so far? Kirk?
Salvation, for example, as Israelites were excited about it, and then all of a sudden, now since there's a little bit of opposition, now they're kind of grumbling. I think it's
was just going to let him go, and he instantly increased the labor on him and stuff. So.
Right, yes.
And his strategy is brilliant in that he's making it harder on them so that they basically have animosity towards Moses, right? That create conflict and division to divide. And so that they're fine to say, go away, Moses, you're making things harder.
Yeah. Yeah, this.
Also, pharaohs believe themselves to be descendants of gods. So pharaoh is a god king in their own mind, right? Generation after generation.
Right.
So he's a pretty prideful man, right? He believes he's divinely ordained in a position of power. So it's going to be, he's a tough sell to.
Right. That's a good way to say it there. He is definitely. And that's a good point about the strategy there. It's, you know, he has this idea that, well, these people are coming to me, they think I'm going to let them go. We're just going to smash that idea right now. They're not going to come and ask again after this, right? We're going to make things hard for them. They're going to forget about it. They're going to wish that they were slaves like they used to be instead of the slaves that they are now. And it's good strategy on his part,
and
for
Bob,
sure.
I think
go ahead.
Even the Israelites, through the things that they did, they got themselves in a tough situation, you know. And then pretty soon it got pretty tragic. And I think that's, you know, we should have foresight in what we're doing. And I know, like Kirk said, it might not matter what we do. We're still gonna have a lot of problems.
Right.
But I think it's important for us to get our minds wrapped around all this stuff so that we're ready when that comes, and not to just, I think the Israelites, and we all do that, it seems like a lot of times we just keep edging over and going away, going against God, and pretty soon we're in a real pickle, you know.
Right. Little bits at a time.
Yeah.
And it turned into a pretty big deal. Yep, go ahead, Kirk.
So, and kind of along with what Ray was saying about that he tried to squash it right away, you know, and going ahead to relate to us. I mean, when Jesus taught the parable of the sower, it has four different soils. The seed is thrown along the path, which the birds come and snatch away, which is like the devil snatching the seed, any of the word away, right away, squashing it right away. Or you got the next level where that is among the stones, where they excitedly initially take root and they spring up with excitement, but then when persecution arises, like the stones, and then they drag them by their way. Then you got the third, which is among the thorns, where the worries of the world choke out the word. So they're worried about other things, and so they're forgetting about what God really wants them to do. And then you got the fourth, which is the good soil that receives the word and it produces crops 30 and 60 and 100-fold and stuff. And so, but that's Satan's tactic all the way through, is to try and get him to stop initially, and then he'll keep pushing and keep pushing, but eventually we gotta.
That's a good thought, and that's something we should kind of keep that thought in the back of our mind as we move on, you know, in the next several weeks too. Kind of as the story unfolds, I think we see that tactic very clearly happen in this story, for sure. One thing I wish I can't find it. I was looking, I got it in a book somewhere. It was a guy talking about the nation of Israel. And learning from the mistakes that they made. He was talking about, as Christians or as people seeking to be godly people, we can learn so much by not doing what Israel did. And there was a lot of references and a lot of examples, and it's so true. I mean, their faith was, it was often quick, but often was extinguished just as quickly, and it was up and down, And I've always remembered that. And as you see things in the Old Testament, and you think, oh man, we can't be doing that. And I've thought about that often. And I think we can see that a lot as we move along too. So moving on here, I guess verse 19 of chapter 5. If someone would like to read that.
And the officers of the children.
from your grip of your daily task.
Okay, so we see the foreman that we talked about that had been punished and been beaten, and then they had went to Pharaoh and asked, you know, cried out to him saying, you know, we can't do this. And he says, well, that's what you have to do. Then at this point, they were pretty concerned because they know this is something that they're not going to be able to accomplish. They know that Pharaoh's not going to look real highly on them if they fail this task. They were troubled. Somebody like to read, moving on now, verses 20 and 21 there in chapter 5 still. Okay, so this is why they were concerned. And they were upset with Moses and Aaron, right? These are the guys that started all this, right? They're the instigators of this problem. That's how they're viewing it, right? And they said to them, may the Lord look upon you and judge you, for you have made us odious in Pharaoh's sight and in the sight of his servants to put a sword in their hand to kill us. They feared for their lives. They thought, you know, just a couple of days ago, we were out making bricks and we really didn't like it, but, you know, it was probably working okay for them compared to what they had now. Now all of a sudden they have to do this task they can't do. They've been beaten. They've been punished. Pharaoh says, you got to figure out a way to do it or it's probably going to cost some lives. So pretty concerned at this point for those people. Let's see how Moses responds here. Verses 22 and 23 of chapter 5. So Moses is a little concerned here too, a little doubtful. God told him that, you know, to go to Pharaoh and he's going to let the people go, but then he also told him that he's going to reject that idea. And then Moses says, ever since I came to him, he's done harm to the people, things have got worse for them. They're not being delivered at all. And I think he does have some doubt here, but also I think he might have some confusion and some concern. You know, what's going on here? You know, or I thought you were going to help us out, kind of a thought. You know, not quite sure how to view the events that are happening. All these people are mad at him. They're not getting set free at all. Things are getting way worse for them, in fact. They're a lot farther from being set free than they ever have been at this point. So, but I don't think Moses is just an unfaithful guy that just like, oh, Lord, you know, why have you done this? Why aren't these people going? I don't think he's given up on what God had told him at this point. I think, but that doesn't mean that he can't have doubt, though. He's just not sure what's going on here. How is this going to work? If I go talk to Pharaoh and things keep getting worse, how is that going to work? So that's kind of where we're at as we finish chapter 5. And I think we're gonna lead into chapter 6 here today, too. So somebody like to read Exodus 6. Quote it down to chapter 6 now, verses 1 through 5, the first 5 verses.
Then the Lord said to Moses, now you shall see what all I will do to Pharaoh. For under compulsion he will let them go, and under compulsion he will drive them out of his land. God spoke further to Moses and said to him, I am the Lord, and I appear to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as God Almighty, but by my name, Lord, I did not make myself known. I also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land in which they sojourn. Furthermore, I have heard the groaning of the sons of Israel because the Egyptians are holding them in bondage, and I have remembered my covenant.
Okay, so we see here where God kind of rallies Moses a little bit here, kind of gives him a little pep talk. And by doing that, he reminds him, first of all, who he is. He says, I am the Lord, and I appeared to Abraham, you know, and Isaac and to Jacob. I've heard the groaning of these people. I remember the covenant I made with them. You know, don't be doubtful here. You know, I'm in control of the situation here. And in the beginning of that, in verse 1, he says, "Now he shall see what I will do to Pharaoh. For under compulsion he shall let them go, and under compulsion he shall drive them out of his land." Not only is he going to let them go, but he's going to force them to go. He's going to say, "You people, get out of here." That's a long ways from where they're at right now, right? The situation they're in is a long ways from what God is telling Moses at this point. But he tells Moses, "You're going to see what I'm going to do to Pharaoh." So our next one, let's jump to verses 6 through 8. Okay, so now God goes a step further with Moses, and he tells him, "This is what I want you to go back and tell the people. Tell them, I am the Lord. I will bring you out of the land of Egypt. I'm going to redeem you with judgments. I'm going to take you from my people. I'm going to be your God. And I'll bring you to the land which I swore to Abraham." So he tell him, not only go back and tell the people, this is what I want you to tell them. So Moses has a plan, right? He's gonna deliver these people. He's gonna deliver them to the land which he swore to Abraham. Right. With that thought, let's turn back to Genesis. Just one book backwards. Genesis chapter 15. You can keep your finger in Exodus. We'll be going back there shortly, I guess. The land that was promised. And I'm sure everybody's excited about another map today. That area that's highlighted in red there, that's what, you know, people refer to as the promised land, right? This land that God promised that they were going to get delivered to. And there's a lot of people in today's world, or, you know, in modern times, that when they think, you know, the term the promised land, or, I mean, this is the chunk of land that's the promised land, right? So let's read in Genesis 15, verses 18 through 21, please.
"On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abraham, saying, 'To your descendants I have given this land, from the river of Egypt as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, the Kenite and the Kenazite and the Ketamite and the Hittite and the Perizzite, and the Rephaim, and the Amorite, and the Canaanite, and the Girgashite, and the Jebusite.'"
So if you look here, the river in Egypt, just a little bit to the left here of where that red line is, but then you extend up this area here to the Euphrates River. So, you know, this, you get this picture of this land that he's talking about there. Now, we also know through many different examples in Scripture that there's things that God is talking to the nation of Israel, but also it's a dual meaning situation where he's talking about the future kingdom, right? The future nation of Israel, the church. Let's turn to Hebrews. Over to the New Testament, almost all the way at the back, you'll find Hebrews chapter 11. I think Kyle was here today too. Kind of, yeah, a little different thought when he was there, but we were there earlier today. Hebrews chapter 11, verses 9 and 10, if somebody would like to read those.
"In a foreign land, dwelling in in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. For he was looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God.
Okay, so he was looking for, what was he looking for?
Cities.
He was looking for that city that had foundations, whose architect and builder is God, right? So let's just skip down a couple of verses, verses 13 through 16, if somebody would like to read those.
All these died in faith by receiving the promises, but having seen them, and having welcomed them from a distance, and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on earth, for those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a country of their own. And indeed, if they had been thinking of that country from which they went out, they would have had an opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them.
Okay, so all these people, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, they died in faith without receiving these promises, right? But having seen them and a welcome from a distance, and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. They weren't strangers and exiles in a different part of the land that belonged to a different part of the land. They were strangers and exiles while they were on earth, right? That's what it says there. For those who say such things make it clear they're seeking a country of their own. And if indeed they had been thinking of that country from which they had went out, they have had the opportunity to return. They could have went and found it, right? They could have went back there if that's what they were seeking. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Abraham understood this promised land that God had gave to him was something better and something bigger and something greater than it was on this earth. And he never found it. He never found that promised land while he was on earth, did he? He wandered around until he ended up dying. He didn't receive that promised land, right? It was something better. He was seeking something more. So when we think about the promised land that these people in Egypt are looking at right now, they're probably thinking about this red highlighted section of land right here. That's where that's the promise they're probably thinking of. They probably don't have an understanding of what God was talking about in that promise. If they had, I think we'd have seen a lot stronger and a lot more faith and a lot different approach from those people at that time. So let's go back to Exodus chapter 6 now. No, sorry. Go ahead, Kirk. That's a good time for comments.
One little deal. The physical land is kind of like when Kyle talked about this morning, the law was had until the seed should come. The physical land, they had to possess the physical land until the seed came as well. Now, if that was part of the promise in any way, the only reason it was part of it is because there had to be that those descendants stay alive all the way to Christ. And that's to fulfill the promise with Abraham. That's why when Satan's trying to destroy the Israelites, he can't get them destroyed. Wherever, through the Egyptians or through whoever else, through the Philistines even trying to divide the kingdom and through even their own kings at times, that line still stays through all the way because God has his hand in that. So the physical land was something they received to fulfill the promise to Abraham of this heavenly land that he was looking for. And because it's kind of like the law had to be there because of transgression that was added. And even in that, we see foreshadows and prophecy of the new covenant and all that anyway. But it was added because of the transgression until the seed was ready to come, until the seed came, which was Christ.
Right.
So the same thing with land. They had to possess that land until the seed came, which was Christ, there to lead them into the spiritual land.
It's just like anything with under the old covenant. It was there for a purpose, but it led us up to that point to when the seed comes is and Kyle talked about this today too, and the physical land is another example, another part of that, just like you're saying. Once Christ came and the new covenant is there, all of those things are they're in the past, right? And if we're desiring that physical land still, that's in the past. You know, it's run its course, you could say. Or even like the intention or the purpose of the law, it ran its course. It brought us up to the point when Jesus came, right? And that's the same with this land. Anybody else got any comments? That's exactly right. The foundation's made by God's hands. So let's move on here in chapter 6, verse 9. We're going to kind of see the response and kind of what happens here now. Okay, so God had talked to Moses, kind of gave him a pep talk, told him, this is what I want you to tell them. And we see here where they did not listen to Moses because of what had happened to him previously. What had changed here between their attitudes? We read this earlier in chapter 4. Or no, maybe I didn't read this earlier. Oh yeah, I did too, when we started out. When Moses and Aaron came to him the first time, and they heard about this stuff, they were excited. They bowed and they worshipped, right? Now, they hear it again, like, nah, we're not buying it. Okay? Things got a little bit tough for them. The first thing that they do is they turn away. Right? And as I alluded earlier, sometimes we look at things that happened with the physical nation of Israel as an example of us what not to do. And here's one of those times. As a Christian, when things get a little bit tough for us, our first instinct can't be to, let's just go back to the way we had it. We really don't like this new lifestyle. We have to have perseverance, right? We have to see it through to the end before we get to the good part. And the nation of Israel struggled with that mightily. Moving on into, I'm sure everybody's going to jump on this section of Scripture here. I'll give you a little heads up on what's coming. But if somebody would like to read 14 all the way down through 25. And what it is, I might have skipped a section here. I'm sorry, I did. Let's back up to verse 10. We'll get to that in a minute. Now you have a big heads up on what's coming. Verses 10 through 13, if somebody would like to read those, please. I left this out of the outline.
6 verse 10?
Yep, 10 through 13 of chapter 6, please.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, go in, speak unto Pharaoh, king of Egypt, that he let the children of Israel go out into his land. And Moses spake before the Lord, saying, behold, the children of Israel have not hearkened unto me. How then shall Pharaoh hear me, who am of uncircumcised lips? Spake unto Moses and unto Aaron, and gave them a charge unto the children of Israel, and unto Pharaoh king of Egypt, to bring the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt.
Okay, so Moses, we saw in verse 9 where he goes and talks to the people and they don't believe. So God comes back to him and tells Moses, he says, go to Pharaoh and tell him to let the people go. But Moses is like, well, I just spoke to the people and they don't listen to me. How is Pharaoh going to listen to me? These people won't even listen to me. And then the Lord spoke to Moses, it says, and to Aaron, and gave them a charge to the sons of Israel and to Pharaoh. And he says, go tell him to bring the sons of Israel out of the land of Egypt. So I'm sure Moses is just sweating right now. You know, he went and told the people, they totally rejected the idea of it. They're mad, they're upset at him, and God says, it's time for you to go talk to Pharaoh again. And then verses 14 through 25, that's we're going to see, it's genealogy, it's generations, and I'd like to read it. We're not going to dwell on it too much, but just to have it filed away, I guess. Kyle was shaking his head. He'd like to have it.
I have last week, so I can back it up. These are the heads of their far. Oh man, I messed up on that word. Here we go. These are the heads of their father's households: the sons of Reuben, Israel's firstborn, Hanok and Palu, Hezron and Carmi. These are the families of Reuben: the sons of Simeon, Jemuel and Yamin, Ohad and Jachin and Zohar and Shaul, and the son of the Canaanite woman. These are the families of Simeon. These are the names of the sons of Levi according to the generations: Gershon and Kohath and Merari. And the length of Levi's life was 137 years. The sons of Gershon, Libni, and Shimei, according to their families. The sons of Kohath, Amram, and Izhar, and Hebron, and Uzziel. And the length of Kohath's life was 133 years. The sons of Merari, Malai, and Mushi. These are the sons. These are the families of the Levites, according to their generations. Amram married his father's sister, Jochebed, and she bore him Aaron and Moses. And the length of Amram's life was 137 years. The sons of Izhar, Korah, and Nepheg, and Zichri, the sons of Uzziel, Mishael, and Elzaphan, and Sithri. Aaron married Elisheba, the daughter of Amminadab, the sister of Nashon, and she bore him Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar and Ithamar. The sons of Korah, Aser and Elkanah, and Abisaph. These are the families of the Korahites. Aaron's son Eleazar married one of the daughters of Putiel, and she bore him Phinehas. These are the heads of the father's households of the Levites according to their families.
All right, well done.
I read that.
Did pretty good there, Kyle.
Exactly.
And we've talked about before, you see these passages, and your first thought is, why do I need to read all these things? What does this matter? And what it can do, and we've done this before, and I'm sure we'll do it again somewhere, is when you're putting together a picture of a group of people or a section of time with certain people, you find yourself, you go back to these passages and you start searching and you're like, well, that's so-and-so's son and that was his dad. And like all of a sudden you start building this picture and it really brings life to who these people are. And we can really learn a lot through the generations and that we find in Scripture at times. We just got a couple more here. I think we can squeeze them in. So, verses 26 through 29 of chapter 6, please.
It was the same Aaron of Moses to whom the Lord said, "Bring out the sons of Israel from the land of Egypt according to their hosts." They were the ones who spoke to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, about bringing out the sons of Israel from Egypt. It was the same Moses and Aaron. And it came about on the day when the Lord spoke to Moses in the land of Egypt, that the Lord said to Moses, saying, "I am the Lord, speak to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, all that I speak to you."
We can wait on that one a minute. Okay, so Moses is in this position now where he's hesitant, he's not sure, the people they're not buying it. He referenced earlier there in the chapter, how is Pharaoh going to believe what I'm, or going to listen to what I'm saying when these people won't even believe it? And God is pressing him here, and he in verse 29 he spoke to Moses. He says, "I am the Lord. You speak to Pharaoh all that I speak to you." So God's telling Moses, "You go tell him, you go talk to him, but I'm going to tell you what to say." So maybe he's kind of helping Moses out a little bit here. Because Moses is always saying, "Well, I don't know how to talk. You know, I'm not good with speech." You know, he falls back on that quite a bit. And I don't think he's using an excuse. I think he probably didn't. We talked a little bit, too, that about his upbringing. He was raised an Egyptian from a young boy. He probably was a lot more fluent in their language. He probably could communicate better with the Egyptians than he could with the Hebrew people. So he might have had a realistic gripe here, you could say. He might have struggled to talk to them. But God has helped him. He's given him. He says, "Well, Aaron can talk to him. I'm going to give you Aaron. He's going to come along. He can talk to him. You tell him what to, I'll tell you what to say. You tell him what to say. So that problem has been solved, right? But Moses is struggling with that. So I'd like to read verse 30, last verse there in the chapter. So Moses is struggling a little bit more and more all the time here to get on board, isn't he? Remember the first time God tells him, you know, go talk to Pharaoh. And he reassures him, helps him out, tells him what to say. So he goes and does it. Now he tells him again, and he's like, he's struggling here. You know, God is, come on, Moses. You know, I'm the Lord. I'll tell you what to say. You go to Pharaoh and you talk to him. But he's dragging his feet here a little bit. And this is kind of, We're gonna leave off with this today, but it really is gonna kind of lead up to I guess it's gonna be a couple weeks before we're back to class here. We're gonna kind of see where there's gonna start to be some things are gonna start moving a little bit now. It's more than just God talking to Moses, Moses talking to Pharaoh. Some events are gonna start happening, and really, I mean, from a story standpoint, it starts to get exciting. At this point, we're kind of leading up to all the things that we know are there or know are going to happen, and we're going to start getting into that next week. So with that, does anybody have any comments on anything today or anything they'd like to add or share? Roy, go ahead.
I like how the Lord is testing Moses. He's testing Pharaoh in a way, but he already knows Pharaoh's true nature. And he's testing, of course, the Hebrew people, testing their faith, essentially.
Right, because we know, I mean, God has said that when this is all over and done with, people are going to know who I am, right? The Egyptians are going to understand who this God is, and the Hebrew people are too. So, I mean, it's definitely it's a process that we're in the early stages of right here for sure. Kyle, you had a hand up?
I just think that we're going to, we need to understand that we're on a winning team. And I think that's what he kept trying to tell the Hebrews, you know, the Hebrew people and Moses. This is a winning team, just stay with it.
Right.
And I think we need to understand that this is a winning team. And we need to get the big picture, like that's what he's trying to show them.
Right. That's a good point, yeah. Kyle? Oh, yeah. Ha-ha.
One thing it does, people want the results, but don't want to run the process.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is a perfect example of that very thing right here, yeah.
You can't have the results without the process.
Yeah. Anybody got anything else? All right, let's close in prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, we're thankful for the chance we have to study your word and to spend time studying together and to learn from it. And even a story that we've probably, many of us have heard from childhood on up, we see so much more as we look at it closer. And we see really how truly awesome of a God you are and the power that you have and the way you display it and show it to people and to raise people up as well. We're just thankful for the chance we have to be your people and to see what your plan really is. And we're just glad that we can be encouraged by that. And as we study, we see how great you truly are. And we just pray in Jesus' name. Amen.